Well, good evening. Get the mic on.
We good now? All right, there, a lot better, much better. Good evening. Thank you for coming back and being with us tonight to worship God together and hear another message from God's Word. I was really excited when the elders gave me the opportunity to be able to speak twice in one weekend, which is great. Usually I only get the one opportunity, so I was so thankful to be able to speak twice. And I tried to think of something that may be helpful in this season. And the two things that kept coming to mind as I talked to people were they wanted to know and hear something about hope and the coming of Christ as the Son of God. And they also needed something for feeling overwhelmed in the holiday season. So I wanted to be able to give both to us tonight. As we get started, I want to say thank you. Thank you for welcoming my family in a little over two years and 3 months ago to the family here at Maryville. We're grateful for all of that. I don't get a lot of opportunities to stand up in front of you, and so when I get those opportunities, I want you to hear from me how thankful we are to be here. I'm thankful also for our elders and their wisdom of assembling the staff that they have here. Bringing on Benjamin and Geneva and Luke and Hannah has been so special to our family, and getting to work with him every day is the spice of life. It adds a lot to our office staff, and I'm grateful for Jonathan and the partnership we have formed and what we get to do as a staff, and hopefully that you are grateful for all of us as well as a staff. I'm grateful for our elders and the way they lead our congregation and the wisdom that they've given me and the love and respect that they give to me and to my family as we go through these days. At Christmas time, we get kind of in that habit of wanting to thank people, wanting to let people know how much we care and love them, and I care and love you. As a congregation, we truly feel at home. We truly feel like we're part of the family. This is the church we've been looking for since college, and that's why we kind of bounced around a little bit, and we're grateful to be here. I want to start tonight by telling a story. It's kind of the habit I get in when I preach is introducing what I want to talk about with a story. And so I want to tell you a story about a friend of mine in Fresno, California. He called a couple weeks ago and told me this crazy story. When he first had his daughter, he set up this this idea of having daddy-daughter dates every Saturday. And so when we had Eden, I wanted to copy that idea. I loved that idea. I wanted to be able to do something with her. And so we ended up doing daddy-daughter dates a lot of times together. His daughter was quite a bit older than Eden, but even at 6 months, 7 months, I would take Eden out, and she would just kind of drool and sit there and smile at us. And the other daughter would run around and play and do whatever, but we would have these great special moments with our daughters. Well, he called and he said, "Hey, are you still doing daddy-daughter dates?" I said, "Oh, yeah, man, it's the best." And he said, "I got to tell you a story." He said, "Last week, after taking my daughter out to eat, I said, 'What do you want to do today?' And she said, 'You know, I really want to go feed the ducks.'" He said, "Well, okay, we'll go get some bread and we'll go feed the ducks." Now, there's a park just on the west side of Fresno near where they live that has a big pond, has just a giant play structure and a lot of walking trails, and then this nice pond where the ducks kind of congregate. And so they went to the pond, and they first went and played on the play structure. She would swing on the swing set, and they had a really good time. And finally she said, "Dad, ducks." And so he went and got the bread. They went to the pond, and they started feeding the ducks. And if you've ever been to a duck pond and fed ducks, you know what's happening next. Some of the neighboring geese start to get jealous of the bread that the ducks are consuming. And so all of a sudden he heard this, and he turns around, and there's this goose with his with his wings spread out wide and his neck pumping at my friend. And just like any good dad would do, he pushed his daughter to the back and he yelled at that goose and told that goose to get away. Well, no, that's not what he did at all. My friend turned and ran, leaving his 7-year-old daughter to fend for herself with bread in hand at this charging, angry goose. We laugh, but for many of us, a lot of times in our lives, we do the same things. The small things in life hijack our day, they wreck our week, they mess up our month and our year. I get so focused on the small things that I forget that I'm equipped to handle the situation at hand, that I'm empowered by the Spirit of God living in me to deal with these things. My friend is 6'3", 230. I'm pretty sure he could take on a goose, but in the moment, all he could see was this angry bird coming at him, and he ran. How many things in our lives come at us, and when we sit back and think about them, they're actually relatively small, but we allow ourselves to be overwhelmed by these seemingly small things. Ashley and I, before we had kids, would take my days off in California and travel to the coast. Living in Fresno was a wonderful thing for two 20-somethings without kids because we were about 2 hours from everything. We're 2 hours from San Francisco, from the coast, an hour from Yosemite, an hour and a half from the California Redwoods. We could get anywhere we needed to get in a day and really enjoy a day doing some wonderful things. So we'd get up early in the morning, we'd drive to the coast, we'd spend all day, we'd have lunch, we'd have dinner, and then we'd drive home that night because that's what you do when you're young and married and don't have kids. And then when you have kids, you just sit at home and wait. No, I'm just kidding. They're great and wonderful. Merry Christmas. We used to go and go to the California coast, and on one trip in particular, we got there, and Ashley had the bright idea of going ocean kayaking. Now, I grew up in the rivers of Middle and East Tennessee. My family had a canoe. When I got in high school, I bought a kayak and had it through college, and then even into our marriage. So I knew how to handle a kayak in rivers. I knew how to handle a kayak in Tennessee. But this is a whole different animal, being in the Pacific Ocean in a two-person kayak, having not only to kind of deal with my own imperfections, but also the imperfections of someone else, and kind of rowing and steering the boat. Well, we got out there, and it was actually not so bad. We really enjoyed it. We're having a good time, and we started to get kind of like, oh, yeah, we've got the hang of this. We know what we're doing. And we saw this rock outcropping just off the side of the coast. And that rock outcropping, it was a huge mass and form with that the water had carved caves into. And so I get this bright idea, hey, Ashley, why don't we try to ride the wave and kind of surf through these openings and into these caves and then out the other side and hit the shore. And we were really excited about this. We thought, oh, man, this is great. You know, we'll be adventurous. We'll do something really neat. We'll have great stories to tell. And so we started, and we got lined up, we followed the wave, we rode it in, and we got turned around. So we said, oh man, we need to try it again. And so usually people would learn after they got turned around by wave the first time, hey, this probably isn't going to work, not us. And so we got back and kind of aimed the kayak again. We got on the wave, we started to ride it, and then all of a sudden it flipped, turned us around, threw us into the side of the cave. Both of us were able to bail out just in time. But it bent the kayak, busted the kayak, and then we had to swim and drag it to shore. Ashley said once we got to shore, I don't remember any of this, but she said once we got to shore, I just held the kayak because the shoreline was maybe as big as this stage with rock cliffs on either side. And she said, I just held the kayak in my hand as we were getting beaten by the waves and just complained about the tightness of my sandals. I was in such shock that all I could say is, I wish my chacos were looser. And I just held that kayak for dear life. And it took the Coast Guard having to come to rescue us because the guy from the kayak company rode his kayak, slammed into the same rock face, and had to get rescued by the Coast Guard as well as our boats had to get dragged up the side of the cliff. But in that moment, and what I want you to hear from this, is that there are many times in life where we've been in these same situations, and maybe we're there currently, that place where the current of our circumstances seems to be swirling faster than ever. And if we aren't prepared, we will be taken down with it and buy into the lie that insecurity, fear, worry, and doubt are our new normal. We stand, as I did, on a beach, paralyzed by our circumstances. Have you ever gotten into a situation where you think something is so bad you don't really even notice what is happening to you or what has happened to you? As I stood on the beach, I didn't realize I had a gash on my arm that I was bleeding from, and I had lost my wedding ring. I just stood there, and all I could think about was my sandals. So many of us are focused on the small things, the small worries, the small insecurities, that we don't realize how fast the current has swirled around us and how deep into these worries, insecurities, and fears we've gotten, and we are overwhelmed. How many of us are crying out for Jesus to change our circumstances, but he is trying to change us to show his love in our circumstances? I want you to hear it one more time. How many of us are crying out for Jesus to change our circumstances, but he is trying to change us to show his love in our circumstances? We have to understand that change begins with a decision to be overwhelmed or to overcome. Look at 1 John 3, 4 and 5. 1 John 3, verses 4 and 5. We're going to come back to the verse Morgan read in just a little while. 1 John 3, 4 and 5. Oh, five, sorry, 1 John 5. 1 John 5, 4 and 5. For everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? Only the one that believes Jesus is the Son of God. Now, this is one of those passages that sounds really, really great. And we want to put it in our offices, and we want to put it in our homes, and we want to put it on bumper stickers, and we want to wear it on necklaces, and we want to have it around us all the time, and we want to see it, and we want to believe it. But it's one of those verses that sometimes we just kind of gloss over, and it kind of just like we look at it so much, we think about it so much, we don't really see the power in it. We don't understand what it's really saying to us. We don't really get the deeper message of it. And it says, for everyone born of God overcomes the world. This is the victory that has overcome the world, even our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world? Only the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God. Does our life match up to this encouragement from John? How often do we get overwhelmed rather than allowing God's strength to overcome? How often do we let this verse actually live out in our lives rather than just reading it, seeing it, and not really understanding what it could mean and does mean for us? I feel like we can really better explain this by looking at a character study, so I want us to turn to Daniel. Look at Daniel 1 with me, because I feel like this really illustrates better for us what this means even than this verse does. So we're going to look at Daniel chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 3, and we're going to read through a bit of the chapter before kind of getting into it and discussing it. But Daniel 1, verses 3 through 7. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of the court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years. And after that, they were to enter the king's service. If you look in verses 1 and 2, you see what's happened here. In the third year, verse 1, of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into the hand, along with some of the articles of the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. And then we see the Babylonians first coming into the land and taking these things. And then in verse 3, we see them coming and taking people as slaves, or as counsel, or as people to live in the courts and learn the ways of the Babylonians. If we look through history and kind of get to know and understand the Babylonians, here is what they would do. They would invade a country, take their best and brightest men, and make them slaves to work for and understand the rules and the culture of the people so they could exploit them for the benefit of the king. Daniel, in these first 4 verses, has gone from royalty to slavery. One day he was on top of the world, and the next he was the scum of the earth. Not only was Daniel made a slave, he most likely had to watch many of his family and friends be murdered at the hands of the Babylonians. And the ones that lived, he would have to remain separated from for the duration of his life. Can you imagine a more overwhelming circumstance? And it wasn't over. After his capture, Daniel and his friends were marched to modern-day Iraq, where their names were changed to names that honored other gods, and forced to learn and speak a language that was foreign to them. Now, I want us to read the next verse because I really want us to understand how Daniel reacts to this situation, what he does, how he lives in these circumstances. Daniel 1 and verse 8, "But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way." Daniel refused to allow his circumstances to shape his belief system. Instead, he allowed his belief system to help him overcome his circumstances. Daniel had to make a stand. Most likely, his food had been first offered to idols, idols that had been built to the gods of Babylon. And to eat that food meant that you were partaking in the worship of these idols. A line was drawn and Daniel refused to cross it. It was almost as if he was saying, "You can invade my country, kill my family and friends, take me as a slave to another country, strip me of my identity, change my name, and force me to speak another language, but I will not acknowledge or worship another god, because my God is greater than the circumstances I'm going through." Despite his overwhelming situation, Daniel kept his eyes focused on God, who he knew was greater than anything he was going through. Sometimes we read stories like this and almost let them just be that, stories. We let it slip by us. We let ourselves kind of get by and say, "Oh yeah, that was great because Daniel did that, but I could never do that," or "That's not me," or "That's not what's expected of me or required of me. That's a biblical character." And we don't allow these stories, these true facts, to resonate with us because we say, "Oh, that was him and that was his situation. That's what he had going on." Just because we want to give ourselves a pass doesn't mean that what Daniel experienced wasn't real or legitimate, and that it didn't cause him pain or confusion. What is obvious from the story is that God had Daniel's attention, and he was able to move toward overcoming his situation rather than be overwhelmed by his circumstances. The way we feel in overwhelming circumstances is also real. A lot of times we're told, "Oh, just get up, just get over it. Oh, it's not really a big deal. You know, anybody can handle that situation. Why are you having such a hard time with it?" We go to people who we feel like can help us or can strengthen us through situations, and all they do is say, "Oh, just get up and dust it off. Don't cry, you're a big boy." And we go through these situations and these people telling us that the circumstances and the things we feel are not real. I want you to know that they are real, and the things you face and the way that you feel overwhelmed can be something that holds you back. However, what is true for Daniel is also true for us. The first step in winning the war against worry is understanding that God really is greater than whatever we are going through. Look at Matthew 9, what we looked at the very beginning this evening. Matthew 9, 35 and 36 specifically. "And Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd." I'm going to stop here because a lot of times we go into the next verse and we talk about the harvest and we talk about the people being sent, and we want to use it to discuss missionaries and who needs to go and what needs to happen. But I want us to stop here because I want you to see what Jesus is seeing and why he says the harvest is plentiful and why he says that people need to go, because he sees a people harassed. Because he sees a people without leaders. He sees a people who need compassion, and Jesus has compassion on them. And I'm glad he has compassion on me every day. Because a lot of times I feel leaderless. A lot of times I feel harassed. A lot of times I feel overwhelmed in my life. And the same God, the same Christ that looked at the people then, looks at us now and sees us and shows compassion for our circumstances. He feels your frustration and will send relief. And I know this because look what happens in Daniel's life. Go back to Daniel 1 and verse 9. Just after Daniel resolves to do this, just after Daniel purposes in his heart, is what some translations say, look at what God does in his life to show him that he recognizes the decision Daniel's made and sends relief for the circumstances and situation. It starts with this, and I love how it starts. Make sure you don't miss this. Now, God. Now, God. How many of us sit in a situation or circumstance and feel so overwhelmed, and we're waiting for a now, God moment? We're waiting to turn around and feel that now God is present, that now God has done something, that now God is standing with us, beside us, behind us, fighting for us. In whatever situation, now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. And so Daniel was able to convince the king, the man that was over him who worked for the king, to allow him to eat other foods and to do other things to honor his God, and that his God would bless them. Now God is at work in your life as well. And we forget that because we get so caught up in the little things. We get so caught up in the flapping geese of our life. We get so caught up in the worry and the insecurities and the frustration and the piling bills that we forget and miss that now God is working in our lives. I'm reminded of how Jesus responded to the Pharisees after healing on the Sabbath. He says, "My Father is always working, and so am I." The Pharisees had this narrow view that if they didn't do anything on the Sabbath, neither was God. And Jesus comes in and he shakes everything up and he says, "You need to understand that God is always working. And so will I, as long as I'm on this earth." What about Romans 8:28, the verse on the back of all of our cars and thousands of posters and thousands of Bible classes and thousands of homes? We know who causes everything to work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. We know that these things in our lives, these circumstances, these frustrations, these hardships will work together for good. We understand that. We can quote that verse. We can say it till we're blue in the face, and sometimes we don't really get it. So the question remains, will you remain overwhelmed or will you overcome? What will your line in the sand be? What is the line that you will refuse to cross? I pray that we won't let the goose of insecurity, doubt, fear, or worry intimidate us when we stand with God at our side. I pray that we won't stand on the shore overwhelmed by a past that we can't get over. How many of us are trying to climb and crawl our way out of a past that seems so overwhelming, that seems so anti or apart from God, that we can't seem to find our way into the bigger picture that God has created for us? Know that God is bigger than your past and big enough for your future. In the moments where you find yourself drowning in the worries of life, turn to God who has overcome this life. We find ourselves in the middle of the season, and this is a season of joy and family and friends. And I know a lot of times we get so caught up in everything else that's going on that we feel this feeling, that we just feel so overwhelmed. Feel so overwhelmed by the day-to-day, by the travel, by the family that we don't get to see as frequently as we would like, by the different personalities that we interact with, by the shopping and the parking lots and everything else. And we feel so overwhelmed. I want you to hear and to know what Daniel knew in the overwhelming circumstances, that now God is near, that God is with you and God is acting in your life and God is able to do the things that sometimes we do not give Him credit or think that He can do for us. Tonight, if you need to pray about some of the situations in your life, if you have things that are holding you back from God, if you are literally drowning in the stresses of life and feel so overwhelmed by the things that are happening to you, come and let brothers and sisters wrap their arms around you. Let them know what you're struggling with so we can be a part of that struggle and help you through those things. If you need to shed the past, if you need to let it go and to enter the waters of baptism, to meet Christ and to know Him and to live for Him from now on, we would love for you to do that tonight, to commit yourself to that, to have your sins washed away, to live eternally with Him. If you have any need tonight, we ask you to come as together we stand and sing.